Okay. First of all, I would like to thank the organizers very much for giving me the opportunity to participate in the program and this conference. And I'm also grateful to the KITP for its existence as a refuge for theoretical physicists. I would like to present today some results from my collaborators, Joe Barker, Mehrdad from Leeds, Mehrdad Elyassi from Sendai, and Tao Yu from Delft. Macroscopic quantum effects are well established in fields like superconductivity, nanomagnetism, cold atoms. But they come very difficult to the field of magnetism and spintronics. So what is the reason for that? I would say the reason is the quality factor of magnets and related devices, which cannot really compete, which, for example, top-notch nanomechanical systems. So therefore, I think we should still try to do that, but then the materials are limited to the ones which really have the best qualities. And these are presently magnetic insulators, and especially yttrium iron garnet, or YIG. So after some introduction, I would like to discuss two examples which might be relevant for quantum effects in spintronics and eventually applicable even in the future. So this is a short overview of yttrium iron garnet. It's a synthetic magnet with very convenient properties like a high TC. It's a really good insulator. It has very nice optical properties. It is tunable in many respects. It's a superior spin conductor. And most important for us, it has a very high magnetic quality factor. The acoustic quality is actually even better than the magnetic one, but I will not talk about this today. The magnetic structure is very simple. It consists of a half filled D shells with a large spin of 5½, which are anti-parallel coupled, nicely linear. But since there are more of the tetrahedral than octahedral sides, there is a real magnetic moment. So it is a ferry magnet. The elementary properties, excited properties of this magnetism can be described quite well, actually, by the linearized solution of the LLG equation, which are basically precessional spin waves, with a quadratic dispersion. At k equals zero, we have the coherent motion of all the spins, which we refer to as Kittel mode. And I don't know whether you noticed, but he deceased, unfortunately, in May of this year. We can make wave packages out of the spin waves, which describe dips in the magnetization, which move with the group velocity and thereby transport spin and spin current. Finally, we can quantize these modes to generate magnons, so they obey boson commutation rules, and you can distribute them according to Planck. From a quantum mechanical point of view, we can also derive the magnons, as most of you will know, by expanding the Heisenberg-Hamiltonian in terms of the Holstein-Primakov expansion. And the lowest term gives you the non-interacting magnons with Bose character. Higher terms, however, they introduce non-linearities, and these non-linearities can be described by magnon interactions. So at finite temperature or finite excitations, the magnons are strongly interacting boson gas. Usually, people take into account the next leading terms, which would be 3 magnons and 4 magnons interactions. And here are some scattering terms, some diagrams of these type of interactions. I will just come to these a little bit later, but these complications are pretty complicated and usually have to be done numerically. So if you have to do numerical anyway, you could consider to go back to the Heisenberg equation and find, sort of calculate the dynamics from that model. And that has been done by Joe Barker. This model basically consists of local spins, which in the case of Yig, it's spin 5/2, so they are really classical. And each of these spins is coupled to a thermal bath, which generates fluctuations stochastic fields, which induce the magnetization dynamics. Now, the fluctuations, they should obey the fluctuation dissipation theorem, which can be expressed in terms of a phenomenological damping parameter, which is here eta, and the distribution function, which is the Planck distribution function for our magnons. Now, in the high temperature limit, this gives the classical noise proportional to kT. Now, yes? Yeah, so this is time, tt prime is fine as well. So this is a correlator with respect to zero. Everything is in time. And if you have the, so we're looking at the thermodynamic limit, so there's no explicit time dependence. It only depends on one time parameter. And this one here is a Fourier transform, yes. Sorry.
So, but it's not always, you're not saying it's always white noise or something?
No, it's quantum noise, yes. So this is the same like if you treat phonons, right? You have classical masses, you have phonons, and you can quantize these phonons, and the noise of these phonons also fields quantum noise at low temperatures.
Shouldn't there be some integral?
Yeah, this is a Fourier transform. This is an
integral. The equation itself, it shouldn't be local in time, no? Is it local in time?
No, this is local in time, yes.
So it's not quantum noise, but the equation is not local.
Okay, this is, of course, you can implement this. This is not local in time, indeed. You're right. So this one here has a memory. Okay, so you're really interested in details. So this one here is the cross product of the spin with the magnetic field. The magnetic field has a static component, which is the applied field or some eventual anisotropy, and this is a fluctuating magnetic field. This is a function. This is, in fact, this has a history, this has a memory effect, which is governed, which has to fulfill this correlation. It's not white noise, it has a memory. And this memory is governed by the quantum statistics. Okay, yes, this is a good remark. Now, we have now an equation of motion for each of these spins, and all of these are coupled. And then we take a couple of millions of spins and with brute force solve this problem. Now, this is the ordered spin. So if we now switch on the noise, the result looks like something like that, which is like this cornfield in the wind. Now, the information in here, you can distill it by calculating the spin-spin correlation function and then the power functions, the Fourier transforms. Now, these are the results of these calculations for two different temperatures. Now, the singularities in this power function, they correspond to the spin waves, which is pretty complicated because the crystal structure is complicated in Yig. The intensity is the magnon occupation on a logarithmic scale here. We see that there are two colors, which is the polarization of the spin waves, which can go with or against the magnetization. This is because this is a Ferri magnet. There are optical and acoustic modes. And this is, of course, a strong function of temperature. Now, from these calculations, you can also calculate all sorts of thermodynamic properties. The most serious test of these calculations is actually neutron scattering. And my colleague Yusuke Nambu from the IMR, Tohoku University, and colleagues have calculated out for the first time carried out polarized neutron scattering, inelastic scattering at the EN20 beam line of the ILL. And you see here the results for a selected Brillouin zone, which corresponds to structurally forbidden reflections. And you can compare the inelastic scattering. These are the experimental one, and these are the calculated ones, which are convoluted with the experimental resolution. And the agreement is very nice. So you can calculate the scattering experiments also in other parts of reciprocal space. And here you see then two different reciprocal lattice vectors and compare here calculations with the peaks of the experiments, and also here the agreement is very nice. So it's quite safe to say that we understand even a complicated material like YIG very well, actually. The next point here would to calculate transport, like spin transport and heat transport, taking into account Umklapp scattering, for example. Now, in magnonics, and certainly if we are at low temperature, we are not interested in the total spectrum. We are interested only on what happens very close to the gamma point at frequencies up to, say, 10 gigahertz or so. Now, we see that we can really fit this low frequency spectra very nicely with a simple parabolic model, and the dispersion and lifetime is practically temperature independent according to these calculations. So the very simple model in the beginning actually works quite well for most applications. However, in this regime, we have other complications, and these are the dipolar interactions. Now, magnetic monopoles are sources and sinks of magnetic fields. Whether they exist as elementary particle is still, I think, a question of dispute, but in condensed matter, they are ubiquitous, because anytime we have a finite divergence of the magnetization, we are creating magnetic carriers, magnetic charges. Now, these magnetic charges, they generate magnetic fields according to Coulomb's law like that. As an example, consider a long wire, which is saturated. In that case, this divergence of magnetization only exists at the edges where we have magnetic monopoles. Magnetic monopoles are also seen as defects in spin ice, for example. Now, if you have a dynamic problem, the self-consistent solution of the dipolar fields from the magnetic charges and the magnetization dynamics, they have to be calculated self-consistently. And here you see a nice animation of the magnonic hydrogen atom, if you like, just the sphere of YIG, and these are the elementary excitations, magnon excitations in such a case. So it gets quite complicated because this dipolar interaction is very anisotropic. We see this also if you look at the dispersion of thin films, which you indicated here, the dispersion for spin waves in different directions relative to the magnetization. So these red ones, for example, these are the backward moving spin waves, which you have if magnetization and applied magnetic field and wave number is in the same direction. When they're normal and in plane, we have surface modes and they have a positive dispersion. I will discuss this in a second. Now these two, this red and the green one, are plotted here on a logarithmic k scale. And we see that at large k, exchange always wins. This is a parabolic dispersion. What I would like you to remember is that there is a degeneracy of this Kittel mode in the center and these finite k modes in plus and minus k direction. Now, interesting here is that in these magnetic systems, we have chirality. Now, we have chirality, heard chirality several times. I don't have to explain it to you, but here I would define chirality as handedness, just like the edge channels in the quantum Hall effect, which obey this rule here. If you have the normal to the edge and the magnetic field, the direction is governed. And it goes in opposite direction on opposite sides of the sample. Now, this chirality we also have in just very elementary ferromagnets. And let's consider these surface waves I discussed before, something like that. Now, if we establish such a surface wave, we are generating plus and minus charges on the surface, and these generate magnetic fields between them, which then interact with the nodes where the magnetization is in the plane. Now, magnetic fields only rotate things, precess things in a certain direction, and this gives you, if you just think a little bit about it, that it means that this phase of this wave can shift only in one direction and not in the other direction. This is the chirality. Now, this has been understood already for a long time, since Damon Eschbach 1959. Now, only this year, Yamamoto-san found out that actually these modes are also topologically protected. And I copy here just a picture out of their paper. I must admit that I don't really understand what they are talking about, but they find that these topology, these modes, these surface modes, they form a new class, CE class, which is different from the normal ones, and so far there is no upper band. So if you're interested, please check out this paper. On the more utilitarian side, these modes have disadvantages. They have a small group velocity. They dephase very easily by weak disorder. And as soon as you make finite thin films, there is large backscattering and the topology protection is lost. Good. This was my introduction. And now I would like to address the work by Mehrdad on nonlinearities in cavities. Now, cavity in physics does not enrich your dentist. It's just a box which quantizes the fields inside. So this one here is just a copper box, for example, in the microwaves that form standing waves and a discrete spectrum. And if you look at the transmission of such a cavity, you have just this cavity mode at a certain frequency, even if you apply a magnetic field. Now, if you put a magnet into the system, you can tune this frequency through this cavity mode. Now, you would expect naively that as soon as this magnet hits the cavity mode, it will absorb the radiation and you see a dip in the transition. Now, what happens in reality is this one. The point is that the AC magnetic field of the radiation and the dynamics of the magnet, they couple very, very strongly. And this gives an anti-crossing behavior with really a very large gap. And this is something which is quite unique for magnets. It's very easy to get very strong coupling with microwaves. So what you can do, for example, by this strong coupling is you can generate non-linearities quite easily by having sufficiently intense microwaves, but the intensity what you need is actually not so high. Now, these are calculations by Mehrdad on just this system. It's a magnet in a microwave cavity, and it is driven into non-equilibrium regime. Now, this is the phase space. This is the frequency. This is the magnetic field, basically, you apply. And this is the optical mode frequency. And you see here this anti-crossing, which is just a line in the linear regime. But as soon as you pump the system, you get very complicated behavior. You can generate chaotic motion, and you can have, you have limit cycles, fixed points, and you see the different colors here is where everything happens. Now, this is for just one single intensity, which has been suitably chosen for the YIG materials. Now, this is a purely classical calculation, and it mixes bulk mode, the Kittel mode with K equals zero, with these mode at the edges, which are degenerate. And there is one leading pair which contributes to that, with the K and minus K pair because of K conservation. Now, you can do the same calculations for the same system, but none then fully quantum mechanical. And this is indeed what has also Mehrdad also done. And again, for the same parameter space, which we had in the classical calculation mapped out before. Now, what you can do now is calculate, for example, the Wigner functions for selected modes and selected states. And these are very detailed calculations, and I will not go into details here. But what can you do with this? And the point here seems to be entanglement. I'm not an expert in entanglement, correct me if I'm wrong, but I would just like to give you a very short crash course. So an entangled wave function you can have for bosons and for electrons. This is a sort of similar to a singlet state, which cannot be separated into product states. Now, such an entanglement in quantum information is considered to be a valuable resource. In continuous variable system, which is the case here, so it's not just a two-level system, but a continuous system, this entanglement, or the many-body wave function, can be entangled to a degree. So it's not just black and white. Now you can measure the degree of entanglement, and there are observables, there are measures which are observable. Important point is that there are different types of entanglement. There are entanglement which are useful, which can be distilled, which can be used to do all sorts of teleportation, all sorts of tricks, and those which are basically not so useful, which is often in the ground state of many particle systems. Now, this degree of this distillable entanglement can be characterized by a so-called logarithmic negativity of the density matrix. And if you have the density matrix, you can simply compute it. Now, among those distillable one, there can still a Gaussian type, which is the entanglement around fixed points in phase space, or those which are not Gaussian. Now, these Gaussian ones can easily be measured, and that's interesting. So, now the conclusions. This driven system of a microwave cavity of Yig in a good parameter regime can really generate a large amount of entanglement, much larger than, for example, in nanomechanical systems. So that would be the good news. It's also possible to generate quantum squeezing in these systems by the magnons. Now, in general, this entanglement turns out to be not Gaussian, but it is possible to transform it into a Gaussian one by phase locking the limit cycles by applying a microwave with a wavelength which fits these excited K states. And in that case, it should be easily or relatively easily measurable. It is important to manage the heat, because this pumping generates heat. You have to put it along around 1 Kelvin, but it seems to be achievable. So any details, please refer to this article, which is the product of almost 2 years of work. Okay. Finally, I would like to discuss the final topic, which is the chirality in magnetron transport. So I still, how much time do I have?
It's 7 minutes.
7 minutes, good. Now this research was inspired by an experiment which was carried out at Beihang University by Haimin Yu. They considered a sample like this, and it's a little bit complicated. Let's try to understand this. What we have here is this blue one is a thin film of Yig. Its thin film is 20 nanometers. This is a regime in which the surface states, these chiral surface states, do not exist. It is very, very thin, and up and down layers are very close to each other. There are no surface modes. Now then, have on top of this, we see this nanowire array, which consists of cobalt nanowires, which are, very, very thin. And then on top of these nanowires, we have a coplanar waveguide, which is nothing but a generator and a detector of microwaves. So what you can do is you can sort of excite one of these coplanar waveguides and measure whether there is some response on this side, and the separation here is 15 micrometer. Now, what they now basically observe is that you can excite spin waves here. The spin waves propagate from here to here and are detected here. And the microwave transmission is measured in either in S12, this is a signal which goes to 1 to 2, or S21, the signal which goes to 2 to 1. Now, here are the results. What you see here is S21 and S12 as a function of applied magnetic field. Now, the magnetic field can switch the magnetization of the Yig, which is soft, relative to the magnetization of the nanowires, which is hard and fixed. So you can create, from negative magnetic fields, you have a parallel configuration between these magnets here. And for positive fields, it's anti-parallel. Now let's look at the transmission S21 for the parallel situation here at negative magnetic fields. Now, S21 is clearly finite and it is tuned by the magnetic field, and this agrees with the frequency of the nanowire array. On the right side here, S12, you do not see anything. There is a perfect chirality of microwave transmission. You have a microwave diode here. So what is happening? Now we can, actually the explanation is rather trivial. It's the classical dipolar interaction. So these are the monopoles in the static case. But as soon as you have it dynamically, you are also generating charges at the edges of this wire. And if you do an FMR, this rotates. Now the film below detects this fluctuating time-dependent stray fields and reacts to that. Now we can simply calculate this by using classical electrodynamics, because interaction is by Zeeman interaction. We know that Coulomb's law for the monopoles goes like that, and the monopole charge density looks like that. So this can be easily calculated. If we do it for a delta function wire at a certain distance from the surface, you can do it analytically, and you find that this is now the free energy, and the magnetization of the wire only couples to waves which move in one direction, which is perfect chirality. Now, this is a little picture on what is happening here. If we do the FMR of the wire, it generates these dipolar magnetic field, which look like that. Now, you need, for the maximum coupling, you need a spin wave here, which maximizes the dipolar interaction, which we indicated here, which only works for a spin wave in one direction. But if you let the spin wave go in the other direction, the interference is destructive and there is no coupling. Now you can make a simple experiment, for example, just have a single wire and do the same thing. And you see indeed that there is here a response, S12, but no response in S21. We really have a very nice magnetic dipole, magnetic diode. We can assume that we can do this also in the strong coupling limit, and I think it's a unique way, for example, to transmit quantum information from one side to the other side. We can also just heat up one of these wires, and we get a sort of a heat type of dipole, because we find that the magnons, which are accumulated here by heating this wire, this only works in one direction. When this is hot, it does not work when this is cold. Finally, we find out that this chirality pops up almost everywhere. For example, consider a waveguide for microwaves, like indicated here, and it turns out that it has some magical chiral lines here. It turned out that this is actually something is known, which was already known from optics, visible light. Here's a calculation which I stole from Professor Iwamoto's group, which is just an optical fiber, and they had this type of animations. And just now look at these red and blue arrows, which give the polarization of the electric wave, and we see it rotates. Now, in microwaves, this would be a rotating magnetic field. Now, if you put a magnet in here, it will interact with this field. A magnet here would not interact. So that means any energy is transmitted only in one direction, it's chiral. Now, you can make nice games out of that. For example, if you have an array of these magnons and you excite them as an array, phased array, then all the energy is transported only in one direction and accumulates only on one side. And this accumulation is indicated here, and it becomes very, very large for moderate intensity, which is ideal to study nonlinearities, for example. These are my take-home messages. I think you can read them yourself. And thank you very much for your attention.
Nice talk. Questions, yeah?
Thanks, Gerrit, for the talk. I have actually two questions related to you with your model. So you started with this Landau-Lizitz-Gilbert-Langevin equation.
Yes.
But it remained completely unclear to me what was the point of the Langevin, actually, eventually. It seemed that it did not matter for most of the stuff that you
I think sort of, yeah. So, but if you want to calculate entanglement, quantum entanglement, you need a quantum mechanically calculated density matrix and covariance matrices. And for that one, you can do this with the, you need the Langevin equation, right?
You need
I think
some...
this is just to diagonalize just the problem in Fock space with dissipation.
Yeah, but you don't need to do it in this kind of microscopic way where you put this term everywhere. I mean, you can just do a microscopic.
You can do it also semi-classically. Actually, we did both type of calculations, and they give basically consistent results, yes.
Okay, and the second question is about you saw this nonlinearities and you saw some Duffing response.
Yes.
And in your host and Primakov, this Duffing has a 1 over S prefactor, where S is the amount of total spin.
Yes.
Can you estimate this Duffing constant? Or
yes, sort of. I had no time to do the details, but if you sort of confine your space just to the Kittel mode, and take into account the interactions, you can map indeed the problem to the Duffing oscillator. And this, when these non-linearities appear, is really a question on the, for example, the damping parameters and so forth. And you have to tune your intensity in a way that you meet these demands. And these are actually, the parameters are chosen in the way that you are sort of in the bilinear regime of the Duffing oscillator, but not in the chaotic one. So the chaotic dynamics appears if you are not limit yourself to the Kittel mode, but you include the finite K modes at the edges. That completely changes the dynamics of the system. And that is actually the new contribution by method, by taking into account extending the Duffing model to a more realistic one for this problem.
I have two questions. So one is on this cavity idea. So in the conventional cavity systems, oftentimes before any entanglement kicks in, so you talk about polaritons, let's say, you know, bound states of, well, kind of hybridized
yes.
states of
yes, yes, yes.
excitons.
So this you have already in the linear regime, right? So if you let's see, yeah. So this is an experiment of the microwave transmission of such a cavity in the linear regime. So this is the cavity mode, and it sort of strongly couples with the Kittel mode. What you have here in this anti-crossing regime are the so-called magnon polaritons, which means hybrid states between the light or within the photons and the magnons.
I see, and this is at the energy scales of microwaves, it's like a few Kelvin? Or...
This is 10 gigahertz, this is how much, yes.
Yeah, my second question was actually related to this Langevin equation. I kind of asked it during the talk, but I didn't actually get the answer. So could we go back to the Langevin equation? There was this like
this one.
Well, not really. Actually, maybe there was this Landau-Lizitz-Hilbert, I believe.
Okay, just this.
So sorry. To make
no problem.
Yeah,
this one.
Maybe this one. So basically, my question was the following.
Yes.
So you have the correlator of the noise.
Yes.
And it may be white noise or it may be colored noise. So,
no. Yeah, so this is you have something which is called the fluctuation dissipation theorem. Yes, yes. Yes.
So and then in the above equation there's
yes.
just one parameter eta.
Yes.
So is this only true for the white noise or it's always true?
No, this is indeed. In general, the dissipation can also be a non-local function.
What is this eta?
This eta is just the Gilbert damping.
So there is no integral from
non-rigorous. It's a phenomenological parameter. And once you fix this one, and this is the damping, right, which affects the damping SI here, then you conclude that if you accept that, then you can use the fluctuation dissipation theorem and write it like that.
Yeah, so but normally I would expect that if you have a colored noise, you would have a non-local kernel in whatever equations of motion you got, not a number, not just one local.
Yeah, that is true for this fluctuating magnetic field. So it's not a delta function correlated. It's a function which is complicated because this is in omega space. This is a time-dependent type of simulation. So you have to transform this fluctuation into time domain. And there are tricks which have been developed actually from the molecular dynamics community how to do that. So you get correlated noise, which, if Fourier transformed, gives you this relation. That's an important point, yeah.
I have two questions also about the cavity. So I guess my first question is, you mentioned, maybe I missed it, but you mentioned limit cycles. Is that just the collective motion of this LLG equation? So it's classical limit cycle?
Yes, that is a classical limit cycle, which already, let's see.
So, but it's not from, does it survive quantum fluctuation?
That is again another good point. So what you do if you have quantum and quantum with noise, the quantum does quench the chaos, but it does also other things. For example, it can transform fixed points into limit cycles. Mm-hmm. Now, these limit cycles are inconvenient because you cannot make any Gaussian approximation. It would also be difficult to measure the correlations. In order to get rid of these unwanted limit cycles, you have to do this injection locking, which makes experiments probably very difficult, that's how it is. But indeed, this comparison between the classical dynamics and the quantum dynamics is a large part of this paper. So please mm-hmm. have a look.
And my second question is, in this anti-crossing that you observe in the cavity. So what actually sets the matrix element is a magnetic dipole transition. So
yes.
What?
So it's basically the magnetic field. So the microwave has a magnetic field component, and this magnetic field component interacts with the spins basically by the Zeeman interaction. Now, in ferromagnets, this interaction is very strong because you have this collective modes with a very high spin density. Mm-hmm. And that you only have in these ferromagnets, and that makes ferromagnets basically nice for these applications because this anti-crossing is very large.
Okay. Yes.
But indeed, the fact that the splitting, even if you make the samples larger and larger, the splitting also gets larger. It has also to do with the volume. Yes.
Yeah, so this is precisely, I'm curious about your magnum polariton and what is really quantum about the level repulsion you get here. Oh. You have like a phonon polariton in solids. Would that be a quantum entangled state by?
Now, basically, this one is a completely classical phenomenon.
Yeah.
Right? You cannot, it might be quantum that you don't see that. This is just an interaction between the fields. So that's why it's difficult to really see quantum effects, and it's really necessary to go into the nonlinear regime in order to do that. So this one is purely classical. And the same, yeah, so there's no quantum here.
Very interesting talk, Gary. So I have a question of the end part of your talk. You have cobalt nanowire on top of YIG.
Yes.
You have this model of this dipole, this magnetization moving.
Yes.
In this case, are you inferring there are only edge modes on the YIG? So because the dipole interaction at the edge of the nanowire is the strongest, or is it just a toy model?
No, this is a very realistic model, actually.
So YIG thin film, the two edge at the edge.
No, let's see, maybe it's not so quite clear. What I want to show, this one here is the driving FMR. So this magnetization processes here, and it's a Kittel mode of the wire, right? Now this Kittel mode generates dipolar fields, And what I try to plot here is the dipolar fields as a function of position, which is non-local. So actually, so you see these dipolar fields that process in the opposite direction from the magnetization. And this is basically, it's a sort of a finite length spin wave. And this spin wave has a certain direction, and it interacts only with spin waves below, which also go in a certain direction. And it destructively interferes if the spin wave go in the opposite direction. So this I would try to show. Right, so here you see that the dipolar fields is always parallel with the magnetization here. So this is a positive interference. So you get matrix elements here, which can be quite significant. If this one precesses in the opposite direction, if you have a spin wave in the opposite direction, you won't have this energy gain. So they are non-interacting.
This was exactly my question. How would the animation look like with the opposite mode? So you would so this dipolar field it's so all the same. Only the mode, the green mode, would be.
Okay, I've it here a picture. So this are this this is the spin wave dynamics, right? Which looks like that, and this is only allowed for positive omega, not for negative omega. But you still have two different k's, which can be positive and negative. So here, this one would be a smaller k, and this one would be a k larger, and this one would be the forbidden one. So you should now look at the interaction between the dipolar field with this, with it will interact positively with one, but will have no interaction with the other one. And this explains the chirality.
Okay, first question myself. I'm very curious also about this chiral transport that you mentioned. How quantum is that?
That's nothing quantum at all. It's purely classical.
All right.
But we believe that we can get this also into the strong coupling regime. Okay. And if you have the strong coupling regime, we can use it as a quantum information transmitter. We can sort of modulate the system with quantum information, which can then be transported from one side to the other side. Because and then can everything can be because everything is completely coherent, so it can be coherently coupled, for example, to a superconducting qubit. And this is things which have been done, for example, in the Tokyo University group by Nakamura, for example.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
And another question, maybe, wouldn't the higher multiples blurry a little bit the
transport? Yeah, and, right, but that, then you're talking about non-linearities. So this is all still in the linear regime. In the non-linear regime, it of course gets very interesting, but we have in this case not really looked at that yet.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So if there are no further questions, we will break the session now and we will recombine at 4 o'clock, coffee break.
Okay. Thank you very much.